Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, spiritual teacher and interfaith minister, Dr. Jonathan H. Ellerbe.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Tony Moss. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am tapping into an experience right now that I haven't thought about in decades. Thanks to both our guest and our performance guest, I started thinking about myself as a child and growing up very, very religious in a very, very religious family. We were very Catholic, and by very, we would go to church all the time, not just every Sunday, but more, with different events and et cetera. I myself feel like I got to experience the experience of Catholicism from singing in the church, in the choir as a soloist, being an altar boy, being a lector, being in catechism, which is religious classes, and then going on to assist classes, and then going on to teach religious classes and Bible study. So I got to have that experience, but throughout that whole time, I remember learning about saints and holy people and how they were the ones that really had the experiences. I was just doing stuff. Even though I felt like I was connected to God and I was praying and I was experiencing some special moments of gratitude and crying and love and all of that, I wasn't having what I thought the saints and the holy people were having, and that's what I needed to have in order to be a good Catholic or to be a good human. I needed to be like that. And so I remember praying for God, give me that, but not like the guy who lost his leg, or not like the guy who lost his eyesight, or the lady who, not like those people, like or the guy that had to leave everything and not have a possession. I want to be like the one, let's see, if I could pick, I want the experience of that ecstasy thing, that experience, like just feeling like God is inside of me. That's what I want. Or how about an apparition? I think that would let me know that I was doing this right. So I haven't thought about that in a long time. I've long since stopped wanting to or feeling the need to have that. And yet, ironically, through the many other experiences in my life, I actually feel like I've had some of that and some of the others too. So this is going to be interesting, like I said, with both our guest and our performance guest who could talk around this subject and on this subject. We're going to be talking about awakening to a deeper knowledge of love, life balance, and God.
I'm going to have to spend some of the beginning of the show recovering from the memories that you just wrapped up. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Me too. I'm so glad we're here, because we're gonna figure this out right now. So our interview guest is a spiritual teacher. He's a ceremonial leader. He's an integrative wellness expert, and he's the author of a book that he's just released, The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience. He is Dr. Jonathan H. Ellerbe. Welcome, Dr. Ellerbe, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you so much. It is very much my pleasure to be here.
So, Is it possible that some of us are having these experiences that saints have had and people, holy people have had over the centuries that have been written about? It's just that nobody's written about it lately, potentially. There's the other thing, that maybe none of us have done miracles, but maybe we have on some level.
Yeah, I mean, you're raising an important question to me, and it's a question that my book, Spiritual Experience, is all about. And that is to say that I do think we are having breakthrough experiences, insights, spiritual experiences, aha moments, epiphanies, non-ordinary experiences, paranormal experiences, psychedelics. This stuff's happening all the time, everywhere. But, and your opening kind of set the stage for this comment, but I think what's happened is two major forces in the Western world have caused us to dismiss these things and undermine them, right? So they may happen. We may think it's cool for a moment. We sort of shake our heads and move on, or quickly get back to our phones or whatever we were doing. And those two forces are, at the risk of being provocative right off the bat, the influence of hierarchy-oriented religion, right? Where, as you were saying, hey, only the priest gets to talk to God. Only the saints get to have the experiences. And we start to feel like the rest of you can just sit back and let us do the heavy lifting up here. And then in mainstream society, we've just had a steady press towards materialism. And if we can't explain it scientifically, biologically, arithmetically, well, then it probably doesn't really exist. And I don't think either of those influences are ultimately right.
And some of us growing up humble or have been in submissive, much to like what you were saying, in a submissive place, we don't dare think that we just had one of those experiences, or we can talk to God, or I just saw God in a sense, or in reality.
Yeah, I mean, I, at the risk of treading on a very slippery slope, I think the minute you introduce the idea that if someone is wrong about their spirituality, that they could spend an eternity suffering for that mistake, I think people get pretty cautious, you know? So if you remove that factor and you go to communities where people don't have that fear, then you find people quite openly talking about these experiences in the past, of course, less so now. But a great example would be, you know, I've spent a tremendous amount of my life very closely involved with Indigenous communities. Well, in Indigenous communities around the world, spiritual experiences are expected. Dreams that come true, unexplainable phenomena. You mentioned the word apparitions. No one's surprised when those things happen. In fact, they're probably surprised when they don't. So there's this sense of cultural permission that can shape whether we look twice when a profound synchronicity happens, or we have a special sparkling moment in the middle of a busy day, and all of a sudden something beautiful catches our breath and the world slows down and it feels like everything's going to be okay. These things matter. And let me quickly add, they matter because when we start to pay more attention to them, when we look at the inventory, or what I call, you know, the seven types of spiritual experience, we realize that these experiences, however you explain them, are pointing us towards different qualities of life, of our world, and even of ourselves. So closing them off is like being closed off to a fuller experience of life.
Wow. And I look forward to getting into in a little bit the seven gateways of spiritual experience, which is the title of the book. Goes on to be to say awakening to a deeper knowledge of love, life, balance, and God. But before we get into that, so continuing along this thread, because you're very knowledgeable on this as well, and we talked about it earlier, how could be interesting to go here, tying into growing up with the way that an altar boy dresses and a priest dresses and a nun dresses and all of that, that's the look and feel, and they got to do that for whatever reasons they got to do that. But as I started to expand, I want to expand into learning about other cultures and other religions and have other experiences, I was told you have to dress this way, or you have to listen to this music, or you have to dance this way, whatever it was that made me feel uncomfortable, saying it feels like I'm going from one structure to another. And yet I do believe that there is some validity. I just wasn't sure where it started and where it ended.
Fabulous question, and it raises some complexities about being human. So I actually think that spiritual experience as a topic is a critical missing piece, not only for understanding psychology and healing, but also for understanding a lot of other phenomena in the world, and you've just addressed one of them. When we look back at the origin of most of the world's religious traditions, what we find are essentially founders, prophets, sayers, sages, and so on, who have extraordinary spiritual experiences. And out of those spiritual experiences comes a revelation, right? A new insight around who we are, what we are, why we're here. That's powerful. That's important. That shouldn't be lost. The problem occurs, though, when the person shares that story and someone else who hasn't had the same experience thinks, okay, if I want to experience what they experienced, I better look like them, dress like them, talk like them, do everything they said, and maybe I'll have the same experience. And of course, humans, we tend to, you know, lean in one direction or the other, which is fear or love. Well, you think we'd like to lean into love, but love doesn't feel safe, to be truthful. So people lean into fear. And what that means is now not only are we inspired by an experience and we're sharing messages from it, ways of singing, dancing, moving, dressing, which all, this is important to hear this, might actually help contribute to that consciousness they're trying to raise. I don't think there's anything wrong with those things, but then it starts to go somewhere else. Now it becomes, you have to do this. And if you don't do this, you're wrong. If you don't do this, you're against us. If you don't do this, you're going to suffer. And so the ego takes over, the fear takes over, and all we've lost the whole point of the thing from the beginning, which is to connect with something deeper.
And actually, that leads me right into this very moment. And one of the reasons I'm excited that your book has come out and that you are sharing in the way that you're doing, and for that matter, our performance guests as well, we'll get into that in a little bit, that it seems organically that more and more, like obviously there's a lot going on in the world, and it seems amongst a lot of things that are happening, there is also more talk of God and more talk of spirit and spirituality. There seems to be a desire to learn and to know and to go deeper. What would you say to that? And isn't that good? I mean, is it good?
Yeah, I think what you're observing, I also experience is true. And the statistics around people's beliefs and, you know, prayer and a higher power, you know, bear up your observation. And of course, it's good. I think the tricky thing is that we are growing out of a phase of human history in which religion has really gotten itself into a difficult place. Now, I want to clarify a couple of things here. First of all, I don't think religion's a bad thing. So I don't want anyone to feel like that's what I've been suggesting. I think religion's important. Spiritual traditions, spiritual practices, legacies, histories, philosophies. We need all these things. The problem comes in the hands of what people do with them. So if you take something that's, you know, meant to be a paintbrush and you turn it around and, I'm sorry, poke someone in the eye, you know, you can turn anything against people. So that's left a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of people. But as you say, the human longing for transcendence, the human longing for meaning, the human longing for hope and connection, not only persists, but it's absolutely growing in the face of a kind of despair that probably has never visited this planet before. Life was certainly hard 1,000 years ago. I wouldn't doubt that for a second. People didn't live long, and we can't fool ourselves into thinking it was romantic. But what's different now is that we no longer live in villages. We no longer live in small communities. And a big city is now no longer 10,000 people. A big city is now 10 million people. And so the experience of feeling lost, lonely, anxious, worried, stressed, left out, unseen, unaccounted for, is massive. It is scaling as quickly as technology is scaling itself. And so what happens is when people can't find what they want on their phone, and they can't find what they want from what someone is selling them, then naturally there is a longing to question if there's something more to who and what we are. And I absolutely believe there is. And I do believe spiritual experience is the gateway, not only to respond to that longing, but spiritual experience is what transforms the longing. It transforms the anxiety. It transforms the loneliness. It actually provides us an insight into a fuller experience of being human. So I think spiritual experience is exactly what people are looking for today. Hey, and let's be honest, people call it all kinds of things. They're doing ayahuasca, and they're doing psilocybin, and they're jumping out of airplanes with little glider suits on. I mean, we are in an experience-centric moment because people are desperate to feel alive.
Is that what a spiritual experience is, feeling alive?
Well, I'll tell you something interesting about that question. When we look back at all the research that's been done on this topic, and it starts really around the turn of the 19th century with a psychologist who was also an evolutionary biologist, William James. He, and every research psychologist and neurologist since, when studying the question, what is a spiritual experience? What are the hallmarks of spiritual experiences? Virtually every single researcher, I'm talking in academic settings, comes up with a fairly narrow window of characteristics, one of which is that the spiritual experience feels more real than ordinary life. And that our senses are engaged in a way that feel more vibrant and alive than in ordinary life. So the curious thing is that people often dismiss spiritual experiences, you know, woo-woo or insubstantial or just escapist possible mental health, episodes or problems, when anything could be further from the truth.
Mm.
What we find when we really reflect on spiritual experience and integrate their lessons, their meaning, their feelings, we find that they help us to be healthier, happier, kinder. We feel more connected. And we feel more responsible for each other and ourselves, not in a punitive way or a fearful way, but in a compassionate way. I think they're very important.
Wow. Well, so important. You wrote a book about it. You've dedicated your life to it. Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience. We're talking to Dr. Jonathan H. Ellerbe, and we'll get to talk a little bit more with him when we come back. A little later on, we're going to be joined by our performance guest, Tony Moss, who you may remember hearing on the show before many, many years ago as part of a group, which was very exciting. And this is exciting. And then we'll also have our Ask Dorothy segment, all on the Life Changes Show Online Edition, right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They're dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe. Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi Beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi Meditation. Phi Meditation helps you harness the power of I Am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi Beads at PhiBeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, Beads.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
Awakening to a deeper knowledge of love, life balance, and God. Our guest is Dr. Jonathan H. Ellerby, and our performance guest is Tony Moss. We are speaking about Dr. Ellerby's book, The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience. And let's dive into the at least a couple of the seven. I would have to say that some were not very obvious to me. Actually, let's not go in order. The one that wasn't obvious is truth and beauty. The experience of truth and beauty.
Yeah, so there's something interesting about the seven in the sense that they kind of progress from the most pervasive and common, like a pyramid, that would be the basis. And then they move up number two, three, four, up to seven. And it's categorically seven would be the most rare or uncommon. So the pyramid sort of depicts how frequent or common it is. The experience of truth and beauty, though, ironically, I would say is just as important as the most rare, right? So the most rare, just to give people an idea of what we're talking about. I'm sorry, because I am going to come back to your question. The most rare is what we call the experience of pure consciousness. Now, this is a state that's been documented since the beginning of human writing. And it's typically called nirvana, awakening, enlightenment, something that approximates that. And it's the experience in which the self completely dissolves while awake, while in waking awareness, into a completely unitive state of oneness, to the point where there is no subject, no object. It's what we call non-duality. And it really became the orientation of Eastern traditions. But then let's jump down a few levels. We have also the experience of divine energy. Now, when people talk about psychedelic experiences, this is commonly featured, which is to perceive vividly the energy of things or the universe, or to experience oneself as energy. Now, you don't have to do psychedelics to experience that. I'm just giving an analogy. And then we have the third category, for example, experiences of the spirit world. Almost everything paranormal falls in there. Experiences of ghosts, ancestors, spirit beings, angels, gods, deities. If it's a being, but it's not in a real body, that's probably category three. Category two for people is ordinary magic, which is the situation is ordinary, but the event is unexplainable. That would be a profound synchronicity, a miracle, right? Some unexplainable event. But coming
which is
full
what,
circle,
yeah, which is why truth and beauty sounds like, well, that's not special.
Right, right. Very good.
I get the others.
Right. They're all like, wow, ooh, that's cool. Defies logic, right? So here's the thing. The first category, truth and beauty, is really, it's those moments where life just stops briefly and our senses awaken. And everything in our experience suddenly becomes, you might say, illuminated or becomes vibrant. This can happen in the middle of watching a baseball game. This can happen while gardening, cooking, making love, walking your dog. And typically the hallmark is you cross into a moment of present moment awareness in which your experience of the world around you becomes unfiltered. That means for just a moment, you drop your busyness, your stress, your bills, your worries, your health problems, your dating problems, all these things for a moment vanish.
Your and judgment.
Your judgment, all that, all that. Yeah. And it's just a moment that feels like, wow, everything's okay. Everything's okay. And that could be really, I mean, sometimes we go on a long walk or a hike with a friend. We get to the top, we're a little top, we're a little bit breathless. And then you look out and something catches your attention, right? A beautiful view or the way the sun's hitting the ocean in the distance, if you're listening in California. And then all of a sudden, breathless, right? So it's a moment of awe, a moment of wonder. But here's why it's important. If you stop and savor that moment, or you even write a little note to yourself, what did that feel like? Well, it felt like everything is peaceful. Felt like everything's going to be okay. Felt like everything is working together. Felt like I'm going to be okay. What we realize when we stop and reflect on it is that they're actually true. They're beautiful and true. And we need to orient our lives around those messages, because too often we're oriented around the fear of others, the worry at work, reactions. And in fact, it points to something very important that anyone listening could immediately begin to consider in their life, which is that a beautiful life, a good life, a balanced life, is one in which we prioritize living in deep relationship to whatever is in front of us and not our expectations of it. That's the essence of so much crisis in the world today. I don't relate to you. I relate to what I think about you. I don't relate to that politician or what she just said or he just said. I relate to my assumptions about them, my reactions to them. I'm spending most of my life reacting to myself, not what's really going on. And so moments of truth and beauty remind us that present moment awareness, mindfulness, curiosity, they allow us to see the deeper story and to drop the reactivity. And what follows is usually connection, appreciation, gratitude. And yeah, it doesn't mean everyone's suddenly going to become, whatever, Prince Charming or some enlightened master in front of us just because we're not judging them. Some people we're still going to want to stay away from. But now we do it because it feels clear, feels simple, feels like a healthy choice. But we're not doing it out of anger. We're not doing it out of blame. We're not doing it out of judgment. We don't need that energy in our life. That energy is toxic to us, not the people we're holding it for. Those people don't even know how much we don't like them. We are the ones that hold the toxicity of all of our judgments and reactions. So the experience of truth and beauty is a reminder of that.
Wow. Thank you for that. obviously in the book, or not obviously, but in the book, you share so many personal experiences and interwoven in all the chapters. Is there one that you'd like to share with us now that is something that shouldn't have happened or you didn't expect to happen or that comes to mind?
Yeah, that's, I wasn't prepared really for that question, but the first thing that immediately comes to mind is that I think about a time that I was, and gosh, I hope this is in the book, but I'm going to tell you this experience anyway, because if it's not, it should have been in the book.
Then you'll hold it. You heard it here.
Yeah, you heard it here.
Changes show.
For some reason, when you asked me that question, the first image that flashed through my mind was traveling in India. And I was about 25. Try to keep this short. But I went to a place called Benares or Varanasi. It has different names depending on the tradition and time and all this stuff. Anyway, it's a holy, holy city in India. Many, many religions, traditions, sects have put temples there, you know, even Christian, Jewish, Muslim as well. And it's on the banks of the Ganges River. And it's become legendary as a place where people go to die. In fact, it was believed in many human, in many Hindu traditions that to die and be burned on the ghats, the burning pyres, by the rivers of the Ganges, and then ashes poured into the Ganges. Ganges was an incredible blessing for the soul. Like, this is guaranteed, eternal, whatever you want to equate it to, salvation, transcendence, and so on. So I ended up going down to check out this, I mean, it sounds really dark, right? Where people go to be burned. And I spent kind of a day just sitting between these two temples. And the backs of the temples, it goes, descends down into a kind of a gravelly area and then down to the river. And I watched throughout the day as bodies were brought, you know, prepared in different ways, wrapped in sheets, these things and those things. And the care that was put into the cremation process and all the ritual around death. And what I started to reflect on, well, so what happened, the spiritual experience that happened, was that I found at some moment, maybe I was getting a little sleepy, maybe I was, maybe it was the fumes, I don't know. But I started to sort of drift off into a kind of prolonged daydream. I wasn't asleep, I wasn't awake. And I kind of want to jump to the conclusion for people, because I think the lesson is really why this came to mind. And the lesson came out of the experience, which was, in that sort of dream-like state, it felt like I could see with my eyes closed the way the whole world was flowing like the Ganges River. There was almost like a steady time acceleration, but not frenetic, but smooth. You know, every life rising and falling, just the way the leaves come to the trees in the spring and then come to their fullness in the summer and then wither and pass. And then it comes again. There was this, just this incredible, vivid experience of life's cycles, one after the other, repeating endlessly. And every cycle was both the same as the one before and completely different. And it had that rhythm, right? The way the river just moves and moves and moves, and it appears to be the same river, and it's never the same river twice. Well, however you want to understand what I saw when I opened my eyes, what I found was the scene around me was just transformed. And I realized, and I'm saying this because I want people listening to think about this, you know, that our fear of death and impermanence is really a disservice to our lives. That the more courageous and curious, loving and fearless we become in the face of impermanence and mortality and death, more often than not, that willingness invigorates our lives. We realize, yeah, it's dark to say anyone can go anytime, but it's true. It's dark to say that millions of people live With less, live in poverty, live and suffer, live and die young, live with illness. And yet, isn't that an extraordinary way to live with your eyes open? If you're listening to this show, you got some technology in your life. If you're listening to this show, you've got a mind that's curious. If you're listening to this show, you probably have some choices in front of you about how you live tomorrow. And I'd say that when we, the expression I use is keep death close, we discover that everything, well, it's the theme of your show, really. Mm-hmm. Everything is in the flux of change. And that's not good or bad. It's just the rhythm of life. And the more we seem to align ourselves with the way things are, the more choices we have around the things we can change, and the more grace we have around the things we can't.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for taking us there. And thank you for all the places that you take us in the book. As we bring our conversation to a close, I want to share that in your last chapter, The Heart of One and All, you have a series of questions, and the very first one took me someplace. It's, am I seeking this today to bring love and wisdom to my life and not only to escape discomfort? And where I took that is to the monologue. And in the monologue, as a child, was I seeking these kinds of confirmations that I am special or that I am in God's favor, or was I being in the moment? And obviously I wasn't being in the moment. I don't know, but it takes me to something I'm going to have to think about after the show. I'm going to have to think a lot after the show. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you all. Let me just very quickly add the question that people can just keep in their minds and their hearts when they're wondering about anything, an experience, a party, a drug, a religion, a group, something they're going to say at work. Is this going to build more connection or more disconnection? Is this going to push people away or bring people together? Am I contributing and participating in the flow, or am I cutting it off? Is this coming from ego or hurt? Is this even necessary? And I'll just say, good Lord, we sure need more people in the world, everyday folks like me and our leaders, to ask the question, is this next thing I'm going to choose really building a world of connection and a vibrant future or not? Because if it's not, I could probably just pass or keep it to myself.
You know, Jonathan, that's not in the book. But but it's here on the show, and if you want to write that down, we'd be happy to share that as a blog on our website, because that is a great question too, along with everything else that's in the book. So the book, once again, is The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience by Dr. Jonathan H. Ellerbe. Thank you, Jonathan. This has been an absolute pleasure and a great experience.
Oh, thank you. I'm really happy to be here, and maybe we'll talk again one day.
I would like that very much. And I'll say it with this, an experience that lands somewhere, I think, already within Truth and Beauty. How's that?
Love it. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone listening.
Wait, I want to give the website, Jonathan.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, JonathanEllerbe.com. So Jonathan, A-N, and then Ellerbe, Ellerbe.com. You can find him on social media, Jonathan Ellerbe, PhD. But we have his links and a video of his. He's got lots of videos up on YouTube that you could enjoy. Find him at Life Changes Show and also at JonathanEllerbe.com. Thank you, Jonathan. All the best.
Thank you so much.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy question.
Dear Dorothy, this is Michelle and I need some help. My relationship with my mother has been absolutely brutal, and I have been told I need to forgive her. It has been so bad, and still is when I communicate with her. She isn't asking for forgiveness, and I don't understand why my priest thinks it is my job to forgive her. Why should I forgive her when she still treats me so badly?
Dear Michelle, Just a few minutes before I received your question, I was reading a wonderful article on LinkedIn that explains the gifts of forgiveness, and I totally agree with everything Nordine says in her article titled Embracing Forgiveness, A Journey Towards Inner Peace. This paragraph sums up why I believe forgiving your mother will help you move forward in life. Nordine says, at the heart of forgiveness lies love, the most potent force in the universe. Love has the power to heal wounds, bridge divides, and unite hearts in a bond stronger than any grudge or grievance. When we forgive, we open our hearts to love, to the possibility of connection, understanding, and empathy. Love enables us to see the humanity in ourselves and others, transcending barriers of fear and judgment. Michelle, love is always the answer, and I lovingly encourage you to forgive yourself for your reactionship with your mother and set yourself free. This does not mean that you personally need to speak with your mother in this dimension. You can talk to her higher self from your higher self and set very clear and healthy boundaries. You could thank her for giving you life and tell her that you love her unconditionally. And yet, you choose to love and honor yourself by no longer subjecting yourself to the pain that comes with communicating with her in this dimension. I've personally done this with family members and am at peace with my decision. So I want you to know that you too can set yourself free. If you choose to do this, please update me as to the results. I look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guest, Tony Moss, here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to dorothydonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back, and our performance guest is a visual and recording artist. Actually, he is a producer, he's a singer, he's a songwriter, he's a public speaker. My gosh, we could go on, and we're going to dig right in. Tony Moss, welcome back to the Life Changes Show.
It's been a while. Thank you. I'm really delighted to be back.
It's great to have you back as a solo artist, which you have been probably since you were a child.
For the most part, yeah.
Right. But you've been a part of and you've helped found many groups, right? Or at least a handful.
Yeah, back when I was on the Life Changes show originally, I was part of a group called the Love Amp Project.
Yes.
And we're all still friends and still do our thing together occasionally. But that group was always a group of solo artists.
Yes.
And I just finally found the space in my life to put some energy into recording a lot of music and different projects that didn't work in any other format. So it's been a really beautiful process.
Well, interestingly enough, the album is called Joy, right? That you just released. So sounds like there's a joyful process here, and I'm sure a lot of work. But before we get into that, we've wanted you on the show for quite a while, and then when we finally connected about having you on, you were traveling, and here we are. We landed on this particular show, unbeknownst to you, and that our guest was going to be Dr. Ellerbe, about a conversation which you talk about and you teach about and you guide people through, right?
Yeah. I was listening, of course, to Dr. Ellerbe and just thinking, like, what the genius of Life Changes Radio to bring us together. I so resonated with every single thing that he shared. And yeah, it was just perfect. And I can speak to that from, you know, my particular perspective.
Please do, because actually it also ties in the monologue with the growing up in the church and the singing in the church, which you did and did and did.
Yeah, most of my, so I grew up predominantly in the Bay Area, and all of my family, most of them are musicians, and that was around gospel music. We were Southern Baptist. My mother was the leader of the choir of the churches that we belonged to. And in addition to that, she and her sisters, they were known as the Stovall Sisters. They were very popular backup singers professionally during the late 60s and early 70s. And they released an album called the Stovall Sisters with Warner Reprise Records. And at the time, it was the first kind of gospel soul like funk crossover album. And of course, they had some fans at the time, but that album has since gone on to be like one of the most collectible and sought after, you know, within that genre.
Nice. So it's not only in your blood, but it was all around you. So there was probably never a moment where there wasn't music.
It was osmosis, yeah. And so much so that started my kind of artistic career, it was actually as a dancer. I was doing musical theater.
Oh.
And at some point, yeah, it became obvious that if I really wanted to do the kind of shows that I was interested in, that I had to sing, because there was this category, a lot of people know in theater, you're either a dancer, singer, you know, or the triple threat they call it, that can do all of it, act as well. And I really needed to be a dancer who could sing. So I started taking singing lessons and thinking that I couldn't sing. And I remember telling my mom, I go, guess what? I'm taking singing lessons. She was like, what do you mean singing lessons? For her, that was so strange because I grew up, you know, with this musical background. And sure enough, you know, I go to my singing coach and I was, you know, giving her all of my insecurities and problems. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, you sound great.
Wow.
I didn't know that I could sing because it was second nature to me. And because everyone in our family was so talented, you know, I just assumed like I must be the one that isn't, right? So yeah, it's a big surprise that came relatively later in life.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting to me too, because knowing where you've taken your music, and we'll talk about this in a moment, and how it affects people, like you're tuned into what it's doing, that you came from it being inside of you and then being able to bring it out and take it to a whole other realm.
Absolutely. And because it was introduced to me early on as a expression of spirit and a way to connect to spirit, I just never lost that thread. I certainly evolved it, for sure. Southern and Northern California were at the epicenter of, like the various types of spiritual communities. And I explored that like many people do that live here. And the basic relationship with music as a form of expression and almost even as a spiritual modality, that was just kind of innate for me. Yeah.
Mm. A spiritual modality. Wow.
Yeah, growing exponentially now is this research and application as music and sound as therapy. And very quickly, I remember watching a video on YouTube, and it was basically part of a larger documentary, I think. But in this segment, it was a man who had, I believe, Parkinson's, and he could literally barely walk. He's in this room, and he's kind of, a few inches at a time shuffling across the floor. Then all of a sudden, they put on this kind of symphonic music that they knew that he resonated with. And I kid you not, he took off dancing, and I was blown away. Right. And I started, from that moment inspired to start researching the power and the application of music and sound, not only from the kind of spiritual perspective that I've been looking at, but as an actual practical healing modality. Yeah.
Well, and now we're going to get to hear some of that. As a matter of fact, the very first track, Infinite Colors, that we're going to hear, is that the first track you released of the Joy album?
Yes, because we are still in the process of it's an endless process of making sure before you release an album that you're really happy with it. So we released that track first. Two will be released I believe in a week or so, and then the entire album by the end of March as we're recording.
Wow, this is exciting. So, of course, people can follow you on all the socials, and they can go to Moss, MOSS.me, and catch all of what's happening. But let's go ahead. Anything you want to say about the song before we hear it?
It will speak for itself, and then you'll ask me any questions.
Well, it sure does, because here is Infinite Colors, Tony Moss's brand new hit. We're going to hear it here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition.
How do you catch the speed of light? By traveling to the source of light. There you find the source of light.
To the
Tony Moss. Thank you, Tony. Thank you for sharing that with us. Yes, I have lots of questions, but you know, actually, in the interest of time, and we're going to have to go a little over if you can with us, because
I'm fascinated
how this connection. So we talked about the religion and the church and the singing, and that then the modality of music and the modality of plant medicine and what you do with the mystic soulful music all combined.
Yeah, so I consider myself, I mean, myself privately, now that's like some public, you know, branding of myself, I'm just a very modern mystic. I had lots of different ideas and stories and titles for what I thought my spiritual path and pursuits were growing up. But as I matured, I just realized really what's going on with me is that I've always been, from a surprisingly young age, fascinated by the nature of existence. I just didn't get it, and I was curious about it, and it would keep me up at night. I would like lie on my back looking up at the moon and be like, holy smokes, that thing is floating in space. Wait a minute, I'm floating in space. In fact, I'm on this planet, I just as easily as looking up, I'm actually upside down looking down. Like, I would have these kind of thoughts. So that turned into a lifelong pursuit of wanting to pursue and understand and kind of explore the nature of existence from, you know, spiritual, philosophical, and scientific perspectives. Yeah, and so eventually that led me into a little bit of psychedelic exploration. It wasn't recreational for me. Fortunately, I got introduced to it as a, you know, tool for self-inquiry, basically, and exploration. But as I was doing that, I got introduced to ayahuasca. This is maybe 30 years ago now. And it rocked my world and changed my life. And it became a huge integral part, not only of those pursuits, the things that I was interested in, but completely infiltrated and inspired and altered not only where I was writing music from, but how I wanted it to sound and land for people. And a lot of it really shows up in the song we just listened to.
Mm. Well, it shows up on so much. And so I actually, before I forget, you were playing some of those instruments on that track, right?
Oh, so that particular one, no. And the reason is I have loved electronic music for, you know, quite some time. And because the music in the past that I was producing and sharing was largely acoustic, because it was coming out of a ceremony space and, you know, designed to be played in one, I wanted to really break away from that. And with the Joy album, I wanted to bring together all the different music modalities that were most influential in my life, which was like this gospel and soul, R&B, electronic music, musical theater, because I did it for 12 years, you know, and jazz to some degree. And I got together with my producer, amazing producer, Jonathan Hakakian. I said, these are the songs that I've written, and this is the kind of direction I want to take them into. And your job is to bring them all into the same kind of sonic world, which he did. And it's brilliant.
Wow. Wow. Exciting. Mm-hmm. Wow. So this is like a departure, because it's funny, because you were saying you were watching this guy on YouTube, and I'm like, well, I watched you on YouTube, come to think of it, and I've heard you talk, and I'm watching you play, and so it's funny, like, how we get to experience each other. And speaking of, we got a video of Infinite Colors on our webpage, but you're saying that there's going to be a different one.
Yeah, so the actual music video hasn't been released to the public yet. It might, if it's on YouTube, it's not listed, which is, you know, fine. But it actually premieres, I believe, in 4 or 5 days. And there's a little small clip of it as part of the Spotify page when people find me there. But it is on. It's definitely uploaded. So it's entirely possible that some people are seeing it. Yeah.
Okay, so we might have beat the punch. but it's
oh,
there.
No problem. Yeah.
Okay, but we have a lot of our audience listens in archive, so they're gonna get to experience it. It's there.
Great.
So let's talk about this next song actually, which is a duet. It's called Sun and Moon.
Yes, Sun and Moon. So the album, it's a concept album in this sense, is if someone listens to the album from beginning to end, you'll notice that all the songs start to kind of loop and refer back to each other lyrically and sometimes sonically. So, Sun and Moon, there's a couple of the songs on the album that are very specifically referring to the cosmos, sun and moon, including infinite colors, you know, this kind of traveling through the cosmos and how do you catch the speed of light. This idea that our ancestors, their initial, as far as we know, connection to spirit in terms of it being some kind of formalized ritual religious practice, I'm sure they didn't call it that, had to do with the acknowledgement of the sun and the movement of stars. And I wanted to write a song about that, but from a contemporary perspective. So that's what Sun and Moon is about. And the reason it's a duet is I wanted to play with this idea that I'm representing the masculine, the sun, and Ksenia Luki, who is the featured soloist, she's kind of representing the feminine and the moon.
Nice. Well, here are the two of them with Tony Maas's song that has been released yet or no?
Nope, that one's next week.
Oh,
so
wow.
You guys are getting the sneak preview.
Wow, this is, wow. World premiere here on the Life Changes show. Thank you, Tony, for that. We're going to get to hear right now. Here is Sun and Moon from the Joy album, Tony Maas.
Just like the sun, nothing lasts forever. This time we have together is given by the stars. And when I rise from the night, so grateful, breathing in the light, I'll kiss the sun. Thank you, I'm alive. And every day that I'm alive, may I be humbled by the light and cast a smile as I rise to meet the sun. And every day that I'm alive, may I be humbled by the light and cast a smile as I rise to meet the sun.
Just like the moon, my heart reflects the light of all the heavens that's given by the stars. And when I break from the day, so grateful, breathing in, I'll pray and
moon and sun.
Well, Tony, there you have Moss, the world premiere.
That is awesome. Thank you for sharing that with us. Tony Moss, that's M-O-S-S, and tonymoss.me, M-E, is website. And then you can find him on the socials, and we have his links at the Life Changes Show. You know, Tony, it feels like, I remember, I think when we first connected with you, you were in studio and shared a little bit with us. And then we connected again, and you were going to have your listening party or something just recently, and now we're right in the middle of releases, and it feels like it feels special to be a part of this. So thank you for letting us play.
And it is. Yeah, it's the first time I'm able to share it publicly. I got permission from my producer, and so it's exciting for me too, so I appreciate that.
Well, it's great. So Tony, the first time we got to have you live in studio, this time is online. Hopefully the next time we'll get to experience you live in person, whenever that may be. But in the meantime, we wish you all the best. And
thank you.
Thank you for sharing you and your music with us tonight.
Absolutely. Everyone take care. Thank you.
Thank you. And with a big thank you once again to Tony Moss and our performance guest, and a big thank you to Dr. Jonathan Ellerby. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark LeJour, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.